So in Tunisia, they're calling it the Jasmine Revolution, but maybe they should call it Jasmine.net. A blogger, Ben Abdul Karim Abdullah, on Monday's program was talking about the electronic implications of this revolution.
Major services were blocked. We got like nothing from the internet, and many Facebook and Twitter accounts were blocked also. And it's like, you know, freedom in the internet is freedom of speech, freedom to have easier tools to publish photos and videos.
Easier tools to publish photos and videos in the suddenly uncensored environment in Tunisia. But is that what Facebook's really all about?
BMW Performance are outstanding and exclusive tuning parts provided by BMW.
So if BMW can take over Facebook, what about governments that want to restrict the flow of information? Joining us this morning is Yevgeny Morozov, contributing editor to Foreign Policy and author of a new book called The Net Delusion, which comments on the possibility for social networking actually being a tool for governments in this political flowering that we're seeing around the Middle East, in Tunisia, and possibly in Egypt. Yevgeny, good morning.
Glad to be here.
Net Delusion. You grew up in Belarus, right?
Correct.
Where government control is something you're very, very familiar with. How do governments have both the opportunity and the inclination to take control of these new network tools? Because the view is among the lay population that, there's no way to control these kinds of things. I can Twitter outside of government control. I can be anonymous. The government can't find me, can't trace me, that sort of thing.
I see the opposite happening. The governments have found ways in which to control the web. Some of that is happening by them actually purchasing new media platforms. In Russia, for example, we know of a lot of oligarchs close to the Kremlin who actually purchased all of the major new media platforms in Russia. Yeah. And they can then go and basically delete whatever they don't like.
In fact, one of the biggest investors in the outside of Russia internet space is a Russian investor.
Yuri Milner. Yeah. That's right. Digital Technologies, which now has a major stake in Facebook. But it's not just a matter of deleting content they don't like. It's also a matter of turning to methods like cyber attacks and exerting psychological pressure on independent publishers.
So what governments have actually engaged in denial of service attacks, as far as you can tell?
They hire proxies. They hire, in Russia, for example, a lot of youth groups close to the Kremlin engage in such attacks. And Kremlin, of course, would never acknowledge ever participating in it. So they have cultivated a lot of bloggers, but also youth movements that are very actively turning to those tools. And for the government, it's much better than censorship because the government can always deny their role in their participation.
So groups that work for, like, Anonymous, which, of course, is responsible for harassing the Church of Scientology, as well as apparently doing a denial-of-service attack in the latest Tunisian revolution, the hackers who work for Anonymous potentially have a boom opportunity working for governments who are interested in the same expertise to disrupt internet services, but at the government's request.
Sure, there slowly emerges a market, actually, in cyber attacks. At some point, you could go to eBay and actually purchase the ability to launch cyber attacks or run cyber attacks, yes. So, if you don't like someone and you think that, they don't deserve to be online, you can just go pay a few $100 and then rent what's known as a botnet, this network of computers, which can then go and, disable the website of your competitor. Or, blogger that you don't like. And that's happening more and more often, unfortunately. And the costs of doing that are going down as well.
Twitter had a curiously unurgent or not urgent response to reports that the Egyptians took down the Twitter site over the last 24 hours. Quote, "We're not the experts on how Twitter is being used in highly developing situations thousands of miles from our comfortable headquarters in San Francisco. The experts are those using Twitter on the ground and those coordinating with them around the world." That seems to be a suggestion that the internet space itself is agnostic on the issue of whether the government uses them or whether citizens use them for good or ill.
I think Twitter is a very particular case because Twitter is not making any money we're still making a lot of money, particularly outside of the United States. You know, if you look at Google, they are much more sensitive to what's happening. They are much more careful because they know that they need to make money in China. They need to make money in Russia. They need to make money in Turkey. And Twitter, I think, just being so young, has not yet run into the kind of problems that beset many of the established internet technology companies. So they can afford not to take any stance simply because there is no revenue that the threat in, you know, Egypt or elsewhere.
So perhaps the most succinct way of outlining the net delusion is, and tell me if I'm wrong here, is that the very success of the internet in revenue and commercial terms mm-hmm. is precisely its vulnerability to be shut down by governments who can turn off the money spigot and therefore control the flow of information. And that's the moment we're entering now.
I think you're correct, but another element here is that you have the U.S. government, which wants, on the one hand, promote internet freedom abroad, with Hillary Clinton delivering all of this very, you know, important speeches about the importance of internet freedom, while a lot of your colleagues domestically in FBI and NSA and other agencies want the exact opposite. They want an agenda of internet control, and they want to pressure American companies, expecting that Chinese wouldn't want to pressure Chinese companies.
Right? Take the WikiLeaks situation then.
Yes.
The U.S. officially says that's one of the worst espionage attacks in the history of the United States. We will mm-hmm. prosecuted. Is that incompatible with Hillary Clinton and the FCC's stated open architecture, open source mission for the internet?
I think it is incompatible, and it makes America look very hypocritical. And a lot of commentators abroad have pointed that, you know, it's not possible for America to be decrying cyber attacks, for example, as Hillary Clinton did in her speech a year ago, while the U.S. government itself is very actively engaging in cyber attacks and not even reporting them to Congress, as we learned a few weeks ago. So there is a lot of hypocrisy here, and the reason why I wrote this book is to point out that the more the State Department pushes towards promoting internet freedom, the more problems it creates for itself, because it has not resolved the fundamental problems domestically.
The Twitter, according to the New York Times, got about $250 million in revenue last year. Are they next?
In terms of what?
if they start making money, are they as vulnerable as everyone else if they make $250 million next year?
Yeah, I think they will become vulnerable, and they'll become much more careful about their image. I mean, right now, they're comfortable being seen as the next radio for Europe. You know, they love being seen as a company that facilitates democratic change. Just that a lot of governments wouldn't want to have Twitter present in their countries if they are a radio for Europe and not just a corporation.
A tough brand for Twitter going forward, and as they make money, it's going to be even tougher. You have Evgeny Morozov, contributing editor to Foreign Policy and Boston Review, author of the new book, The Net Delusion, which is how governments can use social networking just like advocates of freedom can. Evgeny, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.